He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I don't know what it is that makes me love you so.
Happy birthday, Dusty Springfield. That era, it is so funny. You have to look at Gothamist, the website. They have a 30-minute documentary about the old Channel 7 Eyewitness News team, the founding team with the anchors Roger Grimsby and Bill Butel. Some of our older listeners can hearken back to those days. Hilarious. There I am. Wearing, I swear to God, there must be 4-inch high heels.
Oh, the disco shoes?
It was my crazy disco shoes. And I speak like that. Just look it up. Maybe we'll play a clip.
Oh, we should.
Later in the program. But I want to start more seriously. I do want to give you a heads up that as the show progresses today, I'm going to tell you why I think the cop who ran down that raving lunatic gunslinger, remember that dramatic video from yesterday? He guns his police cruiser, whacks the guy after the guy had fired a round into the air, picks him right up over the hood, smashes into the windshield. The guy apparently went to the hospital and he had no serious injuries, but the video itself is so dramatic that many are saying, here's another example of police brutality. It wasn't a black guy, it was a Latino guy. But I'll tell you right now, that cop did exactly the right thing. He was smart. Nobody died. Nobody was even seriously hurt. And a nemesis was taken off the streets before he could take that gun that he was wielding into a housing project nearby or a shopping complex nearby. Could have done all number of things. Or the cops just could have stayed off 50 feet away and shot him and killed him. They didn't. They rammed him. A lot of people criticizing the cops. See how aggressive they are. See how hyper they are. See how militarized they are? Bull. What they did was perfect, and I'll get into it, and I can explain a little bit more later on. I also want to get into the Senator Menendez situation. When I had, you may recall, Alan Dershowitz, you remember? No, we had Alan Dershowitz and Arthur Idala on board. Both of them said because Menendez had hired Abby Lowell, this cracker jack lawyer with a terrific record down in Washington, D.C., to defend himself, Senator Menendez could theoretically meet, greet, and defeat these federal charges, these corruption charges against him. That ain't happening, in my view. Now that the guy, the cohort, the Medicare Dr. Melgen, now that he's been indicted, and he's been indicted for tens of millions of dollars worth of alleged corruption, taking money out of the Medicare system, I think that Melgen's certainly going down, and Menendez is going to be close behind him. I think he should resign now. It is inevitable. There's going to be a special election in New Jersey. They can't wait. The next scheduled election is when? It's next year, isn't it? I don't know if they have anything in 2015. Maybe November 2015 they have something. Maybe you could look that up
for
me.
They would hold a special one.
Yeah,
so they
would definitely hold a special, so it costs a few millions, but you can't have a senator, the senior senator from your state, not only under a shadow, but under this huge indictment that is going to make the Michael Grimm situation look like small potatoes. But let me start where I wanted to start. Yesterday we remembered the 150th anniversary of the death of the greatest U.S. president. I think everybody agrees Abraham Lincoln was the greatest U.S. president. George Washington, right in there, also the founder of our country. Abe Lincoln, though, kept the Union together and basically the nation as we know it today with the rights that people of all colors are enjoying today, largely traced to the work of President Abraham Lincoln. 150 years ago yesterday, he was killed, or that's when he passed. He had been shot the night before by John Wilkes Booth. Also yesterday was the second anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombing, and with Tsarnaev's sentencing ongoing, that was also big news. So in all this other stuff going on, it's entirely likely that you overlook today's special day. Today is the Holocaust and Heroism Remembrance Day. It's a worldwide event, and obviously it commemorates the deaths of the 6 million European Jews exterminated by the Nazis in World War II. I mean, obviously the Nazis did a lot of bad things. They killed not just the 6 million Jews. I think the total death toll, the butcher's block, was 50 million. They killed a lot of Russian POWs, for example. They killed gay people. A lot of homosexuals died. Gypsies. A lot of the physically and mentally handicapped were killed by the Nazis because they didn't want to bother with someone who had had something like autism or some other kind of developmentally disability. They just killed them all. Horrific events. I mean, I don't have to, I am embarrassed even to use any kind of adjectives to describe what you know the Holocaust was. I mean, to me, the thing that was so so scary about it, and when I talk to now Sol, who's almost 10 years old, she's very curious about this stuff. And when I talk to her about it, what's the scariest part is that it was so organized what the Nazis did. It was so brutal. It was so banal in a way. It became the way they did business. You know, so there's no discussion of what happened. I really can't help it when you ponder it. We had Eva Schloss, the Anne Frank's stepsister. You know, she was on a few months ago. Erica, my wife, has become friendly with her. But there's no discussion. Even when I talk to Eva Schloss about it, no discussion of the Holocaust that doesn't cause tears and head-shaking distress that such a thing could possibly have been wrought by a modern, educated society like Germany. In the 1930s and 40s, Germany, a nation state, a modern industrialized nation state. Of all these people, educated, sophisticated, world-traveling people attempting to wipe out an entire race of some other people. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's curious. You notice how many Israelis are moving to Berlin now? Something like 20, 30,000 of them live in Berlin.
Well, Germany's a different place now, 2015.
It is, but man, oh man. That's when I visited, and listen, my daughter went to do her junior year abroad there in Berlin. My son Gabriel was there over five years working in Germany. You're right, it's a different place, but it still spooked me out, I'll tell you that. But I think it's precisely because of the stunning industrial scale of the slaughter in World War II that I think, in my personal opinions, that comparisons of the Shoah, you know, that's the Holocaust, but to compare the Shoah, to compare the Holocaust to anything else, you have to be extremely discreet and measured and sure of what you're talking about. For instance, I think it's legit to compare the Holocaust to the similar widespread societal abomination known as slavery. I think slavery, the industry of slavery, the centuries-long industry of slavery, that was genocide. I think that was a Holocaust of African people, mainly males, but African people generally. And I also think that Pope Francis, our blessed Holy Father, the best pope in decades, maybe certainly this century, maybe longer. Pope Francis, I think that he was speaking appropriately, and I know this would tick off a lot of people from Turkey, but I think Pope Francis was speaking appropriately yesterday when he invoked the phrase genocide and alluded to the Holocaust to commemorate and to remember the massive deaths suffered by the Armenian people who were captured by the Turkish army during World War I and immediately after World War I. So you had all of these Armenian captives, and you know, we all know Armenian people, and a lot of them are related to people we know in Lebanon and others in the region there, Orthodox Christians. The Armenian genocide is an appropriate comparison to the Jewish genocide. I think they are of the same, in the same encyclopedic category. You know, the million Armenians that died along with the 6 million Jews and the millions and millions of others. But to compare the Holocaust with any other non-genocidal commercial or medical or political event or action, to compare what the Nazis did to anything else other than those few examples that I gave you is contemptuous. It is really shameful. It cheapens the gut-wrenching stain on the human experience that the Holocaust represents, and it dilutes the hallowed status of the Holocaust. And it's worse. The misuse for short-term political gain is sometimes done by people who know better, like right now. Now, this is where my wife, I know, is going to get mad at me. But Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, he should certainly know better. And yesterday, for Bibi to compare the Nazi genocide of 6 million Jews by Germany to Iran, our ally in Iraq, Iran, to compare what the Nazis did to the Jews in Germany to Iran and its contested nuclear program, and to make that speech, to make that comparison using the sacred background of Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial in Israel, in Jerusalem. To do that, as you urge the world to stop Iran before the mullahs can use these secret nukes to exterminate Israel and perpetrate a second Holocaust, Bibi, bite your tongue. Casting Iran in the role of modern-day Nazi Germany, are you accusing the U.S. government of blindly facilitating a Holocaust of Jews in Israel? Because we're in favor of a negotiated settlement of the current nuclear standoff? Really, Bibi? America, France, Britain, China, Russia, all conspiring to facilitate a second Holocaust? Really, Bibi? Have you no shame?
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it, Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Music from the Steven Spielberg movie Schindler's List as we talk about the Holocaust, commemorate as Holocaust Remembrance Week. And, you know, before we went to the break, Geraldo, you were talking about Bibi Netanyahu comparing the situation in Iran to the Holocaust. Here's what he said at Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Memorial in Jerusalem.
Just as the Nazis tried to destroy civilization and rule as the master race while wiping out the Jewish people, so is Iran striving to take over the region. The bad deal being made with Iran shows that the lessons of history have not been learned. In the face of Iran's aggressive actions, the West is giving in.
This is absolutely intolerable to me. I mean, it makes my blood boil. It is so offensive, so out of line, that we are giving in to another Holocaust, that Barack Obama and Putin and the Chinese leader and Cameron of Great Britain and the French guy, Hollande, they're all giving in to a Holocaust. We're setting up Israel for a Holocaust. I mean, that to me, it physically sickens me. It's such a cheap. John in Oyster Bay. Before I say something I regret, what's on your mind? John, you there?
Hello?
Hi, John, you're on. What's up, man?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think you're being a little unfair. I think he's saying we may be making the same mistake the civilized nations made 70, 80 years ago by not taking Hitler and the Nazis seriously. Even Jews in Germany didn't take him seriously. And do you know what one of their main elite brigades is called the El Quds Brigade? Do you know what the word El Quds means?
What, next year in Jerusalem?
It means Jerusalem. It's the Jerusalem Brigade. Look, they've stated quite plainly they want a Jew-free Middle East. I mean, they're saying death to America, death to Israel. So, I mean, maybe...
Do you believe that in this day and age that the nation of Iran, the ancient Persian nation of Iran, would be engaged in genocide, that they would single out Jewish people for extermination? John, do you believe that?
They're saying pretty much that.
And you believe that, and you believe that the French and the British and the Chinese and the Russians and the Americans All with that as the background, still are naively fiddling as we walk calmly to the gas chamber.
Well, aren't I? Hasn't Iran and the Ayatollahs, haven't they said they want to destroy the Jewish?
Is there one example of an Ayatollah singling out the Jews for extermination?
They said death to Israel. I think that's a pretty good indication.
You know something? I think that when that kind of rhetoric, first of all, that rhetoric is shameful, that death to Israel rhetoric is shameful. But when they're saying death to Israel, I don't believe what they're saying is death to Jews. It's the Zionist entity that they usually point out. But this is something that I find extremely irksome. You know, anti-Semitism is on the rise. Another poll out yesterday that shows for the second year in a row, it's gone from 500 some odd incidents to 700 some odd incidents. And you don't think that it has something to do with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? You notice Netanyahu never mentions the word Palestinian. It's like it doesn't exist.
Geraldo, live, local, today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
If I could take you in my arms and never let go, I could fall in love with you.
Selena. Today's her birthday. I have the same disdain for people who use the Holocaust in some way other than the genocidal act of a nation state using its industrial might and organization to exterminate a race, as I do with people who throw around the expression racism. Everything is racism. You don't get the job because the other guy scored higher than you. It's racism. You know, you're in some way disadvantaged by your landlord or your neighborhood or the weather. It's racism. It's the Holocaust. The Holocaust. You don't like my position on the Iran nuclear negotiations? What about the Holocaust? Extremely inappropriate. Extremely inappropriate. Bibi Netanyahu doesn't own the Holocaust. He doesn't own that sacred memory. I have relatives who died in the Holocaust. Bibi Netanyahu doesn't speak for me. He doesn't speak for those guys at J Street in Washington, D.C., who want a negotiated settlement with Iran, those good Zionists, good Jews. He speaks for himself. He speaks for one faction of one block in Israel. He cobbled together a majority. He rules now. He's a politician. He doesn't own it. He's not king of the Jews. He's not King David. And I'm telling you, that's how you cheapen these historic lessons. This is how you dilute them. I want a negotiated settlement. I want Iran, in exchange for a lifting of the economic sanctions, to stop enriching uranium with the intent on making a bomb. And how are they going to make that Jewish A-bomb anyway? So it's going to land in Israel. It's not going to kill the Arabs or the Muslims. It's only going to kill the Jews. It's not going to involve the other countries in this country in World War III. I'm telling you, he's off the money on this. And to use Yad Vashem, I don't like it. And I don't think it helps, in my mother's words, the Jews. All right, here, Glenda, going to take your calls now. I know that I think virtually everybody disagrees with me today. How about you two? No. Well, you hold your look at Glenda first. No, I'm second. Hi, Glenda.
Hello?
Hi, Glenda. You're on.
Yes. Well, for starters, Geraldo, I don't know how extensively you've read about the Holocaust, but
extensively, my wife reads about it every week. There's another book now. It's what's the Sophie's Choice? But go ahead. What?
No, the War Against the Jews. It was published in the '70s. She was a scholar, Lucy DeVita. I can't even say it, but Lucy Davidovitz. It was the most eye-opening thing. What a basically war they went to make sure that the Jews would be exterminated. And this is just a little tidbit that has gone through history. Jews have always been hunted, vilified, separated.
Agree. I agree with all that.
Okay. Do you think it's anything different in the 21st century that we're going to be making nice with these people who are the original?
Well, let me ask you a question, Glenda. Do you think the hatred against the Jews is any more or less than the Shiite hatred of the Sunnis?
That I don't know, but you know what? They're not, as long as they're killing each other and they're not killing Jews, I can live with that.
All right. There you are revealed. In Vernon, here's Jamie. What's up, Jamie?
Hey, Geraldo. Your statement just about racism. Wasn't it you who said if you're against Michelle Obama's lunch plan, you're a racist?
No.
Yes, it was.
I did not.
I heard you.
Come on.
You did too.
You could be.
Come
anybody
on,
could
Geraldo.
Be against Michelle Obama's race. I don't know what you're smoking, man. Maybe something from a bad, unhealthy lunch. All right, how do you? I have many callers here at 866 Geraldo. I haven't even given the number, and we've been jammed lines for the last 42 minutes. But no, I have not. I've neglected to ask you.
Well, I'm going to answer your question in a really roundabout way.
We've got time. Go ahead.
Okay, so you know how Americans feel like most Americans feel about Barack Obama, at least the ones who call our radio station. You know what their feeling is about the president? That's how I feel about Bibi Netanyahu. So when he opens his mouth, my brain shuts off. So I can't even listen to him anymore. He revolts me as a politician, always has.
And so what
so
about...
when I hear him say this, I can't even listen. I can't even listen to the clip. That's how much I despise the guy.
So, and that feeling about him...
Right.
Is that because you are a relatively progressive liberal person?
I don't think...
And he's a conservative?
Maybe I am progressive when it comes to Israel. You know what it is? I think you outlined it perfectly when you said that I think he thinks himself as the king of the Jews. And I find that so offensive, so incredibly offensive. You are the prime minister of a nation, of Israel, but you don't speak for anybody else. You don't speak for half the people in that nation. And you definitely don't speak for me.
And what about just generally the invocation of the Holocaust intellectualize it?
I think it the same way. You can't. You can't. It's its own separate event in history. And it was when you were trying to find some way to describe the Holocaust. There's no way to even describe it. There's no adjective.
I see reporters. I don't mean to interrupt you. Mm-hmm. I see reporters sometimes. They're standing in front of a burning building. Okay. And many of the residents perish in the blaze. A Holocaust here has raised.
Yes.
It's not a Holocaust.
No.
I mean, it's not a Holocaust. Don't be sloppy. Some words have to be reserved. You know, when I use the expression wage slaves,
mm-hmm.
I'm conscious now. Am I disrespecting all of those uncounted millions who suffered so much under slavery, organized owning of another human being by someone of a different race for commercial and other reasons? Am I? And I'm conscious of it, and I know it has power, and I know it gets attention. But as I say it, I say, am I going a step too far here with my flashy rhetoric?
You might be, actually.
And I might be. You know, so I sit here before you somewhat chastened, because I was just going to utter it again in connection with these $15 an hour people and what they are complaining about. Because I do think that there is a certain level of payment that is like indentured servitude. Maybe I should use that.
Yeah, but slaves were held against their will. They weren't paid. I mean, there's so many differences.
You're right, dude. And I have used that, however effective, rhetorical flourish for the last time. And thank you for putting me on the straight and narrow. John in New York. What's up, John? Thank you for calling 866 Geraldo.
Yeah, I don't quite understand your deep abhorrence of what Bibi used in the parallel.
He's a cheap shot artist. That's what I bore.
Well, but the thing is, you know, in 1938, Germany was not telling the world that they wanted to exterminate the Jews, and then they committed the Holocaust. The only difference between that and what Iran is doing is that they've announced that they want death to the Jews, and as soon as they get the means to do it.
Do you, John, you sound like an intelligent and educated person. Do you believe that Iran wants to wipe out the Jews?
Yes, I do.
So which Iran? I mean, there's like 50 million of them, like 50 million of them, 49 million. How many? What?
Well, they say death to Israel. What does that indicate to you?
These are rhetorical flourishes. Talk about rhetorical flourishes. Death to the Jews, death to Israel. You know,
why do you think it's rhetorical?
Because where's the proof in the pudding, man? Like they're slaughtering each other.
Well, yes, but they also want to destroy Israel. You know, they're not limited into their hatred.
I think that if you have an attitude that everyone who's ever used the rhetorical flow, what about death to America? Did they want to commit genocide against all Americans? Is that any different?
What the Iranians say?
Death to America. I hear death to America more than I hear death to the Jews or death to Israel.
They had the long range.
Death to America. Death to America. Did they literally want to commit genocide against the 330 million of us?
If they get a hold of the means to do it by these missiles that Russia's providing them with, I think they might.
You really do. That's the world you live under, that Iran wants to wipe out all 330 million of us.
Why?
Everybody listening to the show.
Why should I think
And that's why you go to sleep, you worry about that?
Look, no, I don't worry about it, but
why don't you worry about it?
Why
don't you worry about it?
You know,
why don't you worry about it?
Because I have faith in God.
Because it's rhetorical BS. That's why you don't worry about it.
No, but I wouldn't put it past them to try.
Oh, come on, try. Iran's going to try to wipe out all American. I mean, that's people that think like that are dangerous people. Why? Because they take actions based on that phobia, on that fear. Iran wants to wipe out all Americans. Therefore, what should we do? I know what we should do. Get these neocons. Let's make a preemptive strike on Iran. That's my big fear right now. My fear right now is that Israel, in its impatience, or because Bibi Netanyahu controls the reins of power there, they launch a preemptive strike against Iran. And they're going to, you know, hit those nuclear plants. They're going to really make sure that they set back, you know, this country and its evolution toward this technology, this menacing technology. So to prevent the thing that they fear the most, they will bring it about themselves. They'll create a war right now to prevent the war next week or next month or next year or 10 years from now or 20 years or 30 years from now. That's a hell of a way to run a country.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866 Geraldo, 77 WABC.
Marty Berman, my longtime executive producer and a Cantor son from Brooklyn, said the message is getting lost. My whole point is that the Holocaust is a sacred remembrance that should not be used for temporal political advantage. That's my point. My point is I don't want you using the Holocaust unless you're talking about the genocidal deeds of a nation state to wipe out a race of people. And to use it because you don't want the United States and the allies and China and Russia to succeed in these negotiations in Switzerland with Iran over the extent of its nuclear program, I think is real lowball. That's what I'm saying. You know, push comes to shove. I'm the kind of tough Jew that you want to have around. It's tough guys like me that the never again crowd. People that use the Holocaust for their own, vote for Senator A over Senator B because he's more fervently in favor of Israel than this. Yeah. Since when did Israel become a partisan issue? Who made it a partisan issue? Who invited Bibi Netanyahu to speak before Congress during these negotiations? Who split the support for Israel in the Congress of the United States? What's the point of all this? To score petty, short-term political advantage?
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
5 minutes after 11 o'clock on this day after tax day. April 16th, Thursday, gorgeous day. Going to be a nice weekend. We are getting numerous reports that our transmission is being screwed around with. I'm not sure what the hell is going on, but every time I mention the word Holocaust, the transmission wavers. This is not
Seriously?
A joke. Yeah, we have an engineer out, Gene is out at Lodi,
right,
where we have the big transmission facility. Something is going on. I mean, if you have heard any, you know, anything atypical, anything abnormal there, let us know.
Hmm.
Sounds like somebody's messing with it.
Blame WOR. I bet it's them.
I was going to use some bad Holocaust joke, but I don't think that they are appropriate.
That,
yeah, I won't. But my point is, and I'm going to wrap this up because I got more other things to deal with. I think that some things deserve special sanctity. They should be like the relationship between the United States and Israel, even more than that, bigger than that. This is one of those real existential issues. The Holocaust happened. I mean, the pogroms were like the Holocaust, only they weren't quite as organized and they were more localized. But even in the pogroms, I don't use Holocaust as a synonym to the pogroms that happened in Russia and Poland. The Holocaust is a one of. Like I said, I think African slavery is the thing that comes closest to comparing with the Holocaust. And for a politician to use it, to use the Holocaust, to invoke the sorrow, the rage of that historic horror, to make a political point, in this case that you are opposed to the negotiations with Iran on the nuclear deal in Switzerland, is shameful. It is absolutely unacceptable. Okay, I know that there are many of you on the lines that want to talk about that. But let me broaden this discussion. I'm going to talk more politics now in the get the Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu listeners something more relevant to think about in their own minds. Is the announcement yesterday by Hillary Clinton on video? I guess the video was released over the weekend.
Sunday
evening. It was late. Why was it late? It was supposed to be at before noon.
Well, they said they never...
During the morning talk shows, and then it was later in the day.
Well, the campaign claims that 12 o'clock time was something they never set, that the press came up with. They had always intended to release it in the afternoon.
So she spoke in general terms. I mean, first of all, it looked like she had, taken some kind of chill pill because she was very modest in her delivery, relaxed, sincere. You know, we all talked about it last night on Hannity's show on Fox News. And the reaction, I'll get to the reaction. Bernard was on with me, along with Jebediah, one of the conservative commentators, female commentators at Fox. Lovely lady. So Clinton spoke about fairness in life in America. She talked about education, and she talked about being a woman and women's rights, and wouldn't it be cool to have a woman? She talked about jobs, very importantly. Nothing, as I said, nothing specific, which is probably a good thing, considering the fact that she embraces all of Obama's, certainly domestic policies, and they are deeply unpopular with a substantial segment of the American population, so she's not invoking specific solutions to the issues that she raised, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But the reaction to Hillary in the conservative media has been vicious. I mean, it has been absolutely, it's all Benghazi all the time. Benghazi, 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 what has she accomplished? That's the question of the day. What has Hillary accomplished as Secretary of State, for instance? What has Hillary accomplished as Secretary of State, other than all the frequent flyer miles? What has she accomplished? The fact of the matter is, as Secretary of State, she, well, thank God she accomplished less than Colin Powell did when he was Secretary of State, and he acted as the shill for the Bush administration's fake weapons of mass destruction yarn. At least she didn't do that as Secretary of State. But what did she do as Secretary of State? I think it's fair to say that she pointed out how women worldwide are, you know, have the short end of the stick, how girls are being deprived education. You know, she flew all around all those countries in South Asia and elsewhere, making that point time and time again. And I think that is important, and that is, an issue that she raised, I think, successfully and will presumably, if she is elected as the first female president, make that one of her signature issues, if not the signature issue. But my Republicans, I mean, do you really think the United States is going to go along with making abortion illegal again? I mean, are we going to go back to those days? And you hear some of these people, you hear Ted Cruz talk about abortion. It's like he really thinks that Roe v. Wade never happened, that there's a lawyer's chance that we can reverse, dare I say, this genocide of the unborn in the minds of some of these hard right people. Would disenfranchise gays. You know, end gay marriage by some kind of Supreme Court executive fiat, or maybe by law. I bet you could pass that law. I bet you could pass a law making gay marriage illegal. It would be absolutely stricken down as unconstitutional, as it is time and time again being struck down in states across the country. But for the GOP to campaign on illegal immigrants and gay marriage and abortion adds up to one word. Losers. Losers. You can't fight the liberal, even wrapped in the packaging of Hillary Clinton, who's talking about, dare I say, hope and change and women's rights and women's empowerment and girls competing in every regard and breaking the glass ceiling and, you know, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. That's going to be the Democratic message, and the Republican message is going to be no more abortions, end gay marriage, kick these, I don't know, 15 million illegal immigrants out of the country. I don't care if they've been here 10 years. I don't care if they've been here 15 years. I don't care if all their children are citizens. I don't care if they paid their taxes the whole time and committed no crime. Kick them out. That's going to win? Is that going to win? Is that going to prevail? Or, as I believe, is that going to set the stage for the second time in American history, the same party to repeat in the White House for the third consecutive term? Because, like Obamacare, take Obamacare. Has anyone articulated a reasonable, practical, institutable program to repeal Obamacare and substitute it with something that works for all those uninsured Americans? I mean, have you heard Ted Cruz say, or Marco Rubio talks about the future? So here he's talking the future. So the future, as I see it, as an old man, and you have to see, I mentioned in the first hour, you have to see this video of me in Eyewitness News with these high heel shoes and all the rest of it. So far. But you talk about the future. So the future of America, absent immigration, for example, is an aging population. It's going to rely more and more heavily on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and related programs. And that's the reality of it. How are we going to deal with an aging population if indeed we don't allow these undocumented immigrants, or we don't vastly expand our legal immigration policies? So where's the solution that you've heard from Marco Rubio about that? Or Ted Cruz? Or Rand Paul, for that matter? Rand Paul I like, because at least he's had the balls to say every war in the world's not America's fight, necessarily. And the application of massive American force abroad should be done very selectively and probably with the advice and consent of Congress. I still want President Obama to ask Congress for a declaration of war against ISIS, for example, and related Sunni Muslim extremist groups. I would love to see that declaration of war. I mean, we are at war with them, right? Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda, ISIS. Aren't we at war with them? I'd like to see the president do that. Maybe Hillary can make a statement like that. Or Rand Paul can make a statement like that. But Republicans can't run on yesterday when saying they represent tomorrow. And they can't allow Hillary Clinton to go unscathed except for these personality attacks. Because that's what they've been so far. They've all been personality attacks. Oh, she's ugly, she's old, or the pantsuits. Saturday Night Live, good laugh, big laugh. Oh, Bill Clinton playing the sax and going after all the babes. I don't think that's going to work. I don't think that's going to work unless the, and until, particularly these young buckaroo candidates, Rubio, Cruz, Rand Paul, maybe Scott Walker, unless they offer a better alternative, a real workable idea. That's how you beat her. You beat her with tomorrow. You don't beat her with yesterday. Bring out Whitewater. Whitewater? Monica Lewinsky? Yeah, really? 20 years ago, Monica Lewinsky? Yeah, let's play that one 100 times today.
I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
That'll work. If my talking about the reckless use of the word Holocaust for short-term contemporary political purposes, you talk about some of these other issues for your short-term political purposes and see how long you last as a viable candidate. But I'm desperate for your calls. Suzanne Summers is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour, and we will hear from... Do you have that sound of Alec Baldwin chastising those protesters for blocking traffic and making people late going home from work yesterday? I'd love to hear that when we come back. But we will be hearing from one of the marchers, you know, on the big march, the one that was in Trenton yesterday. I don't know where they are today. They're heading toward D.C. We'll hear from them all.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Okay, welcome back. 24 minutes after 11 o'clock here on 77 WABC. We're talking about a lot of things today. You know what? It just give me a little P.S. here. The Knicks. They should be called the Knucks. I mean, they suck historically bad. I mean, this is the worst ever.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, it's so embarrassing that here in the most famous arena on the planet Earth for sports, the host team is the worst team in professional basketball.
It is amazing. But the Rangers are in, and the Nets backed in. I mean, so they're in. They're going to play Atlanta.
The Nets will.
Yeah, they play Atlanta on Saturday, game one.
Excellent, excellent. That's interesting. The Rangers, though, best record in the NHL. I hope they take that hot stick and go to the Stanley Cup Finals again, like they did last year, only with a better result. The other thing I want to talk about, I have very much the cop hitting the guy. You know how I feel. I think the cop did exactly the right thing. It's very dramatic. And that's why there should be cameras everywhere. We should know all about those things. Another thing I noticed that, you know, I celebrate when women come out of their winter hibernation and they shed all their outer coats. But I have to say that more than ever, I hate tattoos on women.
You think they're like a tramp stamp on a woman?
I think. All right. So let's get back to the march now. Let's get back to the protesting for economic equality, and also that's one set of protesters. The other one is protesting against police brutality, which I mentioned. Let's start with something Alec Baldwin said when he confronted on camera some of the protesters who screwed up traffic in Times Square yesterday. Here's Alec.
Somewhere other than we're not going to block the rush hour here in Manhattan at 6 o'clock in the evening. That's a terrible idea. Life in New York is hard enough as it is. I know that when the Occupy Wall Street people did this, the cops beat the hell out of them. You see any cops beating these people up now? No.
Why do you think they're not?
I don't know. You tell me.
What do you think is an effective way out?
You're a news analyst. You tell me.
All right. That's Alec Baldwin. He's right. I mean, he could be a jerk, but he's right. He's absolutely right. But here's Tamika, our friend who's on the big march for justice and an end to police brutality. And she was with us yesterday. So articulate, so smart. Tamika, not that I agree with everything and certainly not the tactics, but Tamika, how are you doing and where are you now?
We're doing well. We're in Pennsylvania now. We were last in Philly. We passed that by a long shot. I'm not sure exactly where we are at this moment, but we are getting far down the road. We're traveling on 476 right now, and we're on the side of a highway, so I got to keep it brief.
Okay. All right. Be careful also, and make sure you step away from the roadway. Now, how have people responded in the last 24 hours since I spoke to you last?
Well, we've had a very mixed relationships and conversations with people. A lot of people are very, very supportive of what we're doing. There are others who have not been. As a matter of fact, right now you can hear truck drivers passing by, who are giving us support by bumping their horns. There are other people who've been screaming racial epithets at us, telling us that we need to get jobs, and most of the people on this route are gainfully employed. So it just shows the disconnect for the issue.
So what do you think about it? You heard Alec Baldwin talking about the Times Square protesters. There are people who are looking to get the minimum wage up to $15 an hour. I don't want to debate what a living wage is, but he said that the way to get support is not to block traffic. Have you listened to what he said and what I told you yesterday, that the way to get support is not to inconvenience people whose support you need to accomplish your goals?
Well, first of all, I'm not really into a conversation about traffic being an inconvenience to lives. There are young black boys who are growing up and their lives are being inconvenienced every day because other young black men have been killed. They're laying dead in the street and there's no justice. And every time someone is not indicted, every time a court does not give us the justice that we deserve, people are inconvenienced. And so if you can't deal with traffic inconvenience, that's your problem, not ours.
But you're going to just make people angry and you won't accomplish your result. You don't want to do that.
Like,
don't you want change, though, Tamika?
What I'm saying to you is we're angry and we've asked for change the nice way. We've marched on the side of sidewalk. We've gone and done all the right things and nothing has happened. So at this point, now we have to stop America and make people call Congress and say, do something about these people who are shutting down traffic. This is not about your convenience. That's the problem. We're dying. We're hurting. Our communities are suffering, and everybody else is conveniently living. And we're not going to allow that to happen anymore. So if you want to stop this from happening, join us and fix the problem. Tell Alec Baldwin, use his voice to support the people who are dying in the streets that are unarmed. That's what he should be doing. And we will stop marching. We don't want to not march. I mean, we don't want to march. We don't want to be out here doing this every day. People got jobs. I have a 16-year-old son that I haven't seen all week, and I hardly can even have a conversation with him on the phone. I don't want to be out here.
Okay, Tamika, good luck. And again, watch the traffic, please, and we'll talk to you again.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
37 minutes after 11 o'clock. She was terrific on Dancing with the Stars. I was rooting for her. She got voted off just now, just recently. But I love her. Suzanne Summers joins us. How are you doing, Suzanne?
Thanks, Geraldo.
Did you like doing that show?
It was the hardest thing I've ever done. You know, you did The Apprentice. There's no time off, and we have our other careers going on at the same time. So, but, you know, I was out there, and I thought, man, all this stuff that I write about and talk about and all the vitamins I take and the hormones I replace and the sleep I get, I was keeping up with the 40-year-olds. I wasn't dancing as well, but, you know, I'm out there with 20 and 30 and 40-year-olds, and my partner was 40, and I thought, I don't have any joint pain. I don't have any, I have all the energy they have. I sometimes would last longer than they would. So I thought it's aspirational. It shows people my age, you know, hey, you take good care of yourself and you can do it too.
Suzanne Summers, my guest, did you feel pretty?
I liked this last dance. I got voted off for the one the week before, the way it works. But I liked this last dance, and it was such a kick-butt arrangement, my kind of thing, the kind of stuff I do in Vegas, you know, is all really sexy. And they shortened the dress right before the show, and the hem was kind of loose. I did a turn, and my heel got caught in the hem, and I lost like 4 seconds of the dance, and that's an eternity in a dance.
Really?
Hard to get back in the groove, but we got it, and we finished it, but I would have liked to. I didn't mind leaving because I had so much to do with promoting this book and Vegas and everything. But I wanted to get really high scores the last time, and that mishap kind of lowered my score. So, whatever. I did my best.
Isn't it amazing how the vibe from the audience, I mean, to have the primetime exposure in a way that is different than people are used to watching you, isn't that a charge?
It's a super charge. Do you know who Chris Botti is?
No.
The trumpet player, really incredible trumpet player, and I was talking to him last week, and he said, how's it going? And I said, it's like this, Chris. I'd like you to teach me to play the trumpet. I only have 5 days to learn it, and on the fifth day, I've got to do it really well and in front of 15 million people. Can you do that? And that's how I felt every Monday morning of, you know, wow, we're starting all over again. You know, I can do the salsa at a wedding when I've had two tequilas, and I'm really good at it. But this salsa is like, oh, it's precise. Oh, really? Oh, you got to put this foot here, that foot there. And
so tell me, did your own rules on healthy living, did that help you?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, I'm 68, as you know. I don't think that I had 68-year-old energy out there. I felt like I had, 40-year-old energy. I keeping up was not an issue at all. It was learning a dance. I have two left feet, and I'm dyslexic. So he'd go, left, left, right, right, left, right, left. And I go, yeah. Why don't we call it this one and that one?
I was asked to do Dancing with the Stars a couple of times, and I always said no because in those days, I don't know how it is now, they kind of were encouraging romance between the celebrity and the professional.
Yeah. Well, Alan.
I know. What did Alan say? That was going to be my question.
He's glued to me at all times. So we have a sick relationship. We do everything together. So he would come to rehearsal and sit at the back of the room on his computer and not pay attention, but pay attention.
Uh-huh.
There was no romance. I could feel a couple happening with a couple of different couples that I wasn't there. I didn't see, but I sure would go, I wonder.
You get the vibe.
Yeah, I got the vibe, but it wasn't Tony and I. He's got a wife and I've got a husband and I'm real happy with what I've got.
Okay. Well, that's good. I could go on to say that they're, half of all marriages have all those things.
Yeah.
But anyway, you survived that. You survived it in every level with great dignity and elan, and I congratulate you for it.
Thank you. Thank you.
So Toxic. You. Tell me about the newest book, Toxic, from Toxic to Not Sick.
Well, you have children, and I'm sure you're hearing from their friends that there's an epidemic of ADD and ADHD and OCD and all the things that we never heard of. Well, the link is toxic exposure. And so now babies are born toxic. The Environmental Working Group came out and said that they did testing of cord blood of newborns, and all of them are born with 180 different toxins common to all of them out of 287 that were studied so far. So the kids are already born toxic. And, vaccines are made for a perfect immune system, and then they work really great. But if your immune system is degraded by toxicity, and if the mother didn't had a toxic body, or if you're born cesarean, it adds another layer of trouble. Cesarean, there's a million cesarean births every year. There's something that nature provides. When we go through the birth canal, that day that we're born, the first swallow we take is not air. The first swallow is our mother's vaginal flora, which is how we colonize our stomach. And so if you bypass that, now you don't get that essential colonization. So babies really should be put on probiotics. But what they're finding now is that to keep the GI tract in balance, which practically nobody's is because of antibiotics, that everybody, if you only took one supplement every day for the rest of your life, take a powerful, good quality probiotic. So I got into this because Alan and I are so healthy. We live this healthy life. And when our house burned down in Malibu.
I remember. So tragic.
Yeah. So we moved into this beautiful house in Serra Retreat up on the hill overlooking Malibu. And it was so beautiful that I said to him, why don't we just buy this house and not go through the aggravation of rebuilding? While we were there during those 4 years, we both started getting sick. And it didn't compute with the way we live and take care of ourselves. Alan had the chronic sinus and red eyes and watery eyes. And then he started getting these facial tics. And a couple of doctors said, well, this looks like pre-Parkinson's or Parkinson's. And I'm going, no, he's too healthy. And then I get sick. My stomach, I'd wake up in the morning. I'm a thin person. My stomach would be flat. By the end of the day, it would be like a basketball. I'm like, what is that? I didn't know what it was. And then I ended up in the hospital for 6 days in anaphylactic shock and, they diagnosed me as having so much cancer that they wanted to start me on chemotherapy. Well, it turns out they were wrong. I didn't have cancer. Alan didn't have Parkinson's. What we had was in that beautiful house. Underneath, there was an unfinished room. There was standing water. And black mold, the worst kind, Strachy Botrys, was crawling up like little shops into the drywall, into the air conditioning ducts, into the heaters, and we're breathing it in. And, imagine the devastating effects of mold that it would create.
Just terrible,
facial
terrible.
Tics. So what happened to Alan, it got into the base of his brainstem, where the central nervous system is, and the mold was attacking that. That was what was causing the facial tics. What was happening to me was the mold got into my intestines, and my not knowing that was what was wrong with me, if I had the littlest bit of sugar, like a date or something like that, it was the happy meal for the mold organisms, and they can multiply by 52 million in a 24-hour period. And that's why I'd go to bed with a flat stomach, and I'd wake up with a basketball.
God. Let me. I'm out of time here. Let me just. Okay. Got to do some things. Toxic is the name of the book. T-O-X, sick.
Right.
From toxic to not sick, the toxins in your body, the diseases they cause, the doctors who can help.
Yeah.
The book is toxic, and all your books are great reads, and so it's so important. But what about Vegas? You mentioned Vegas. How can people see you in Vegas?
You can go to SuzanneSummers.com to get the calendar and the where you buy tickets at the Westgate Hotel. Westgate Hotel, which used to be the Las Vegas Hilton, and I had a residency there in the 80s.
I stayed in Elvis's room in that hotel.
Oh, then, well, my suite is right down the hall from that. I know the room you're in. It's a little antiquated, the old Elvis.
It's fun, but it has a swimming pool and a lawn.
But you got to rub against Elvis in that way. Anyway, the Westgate is just open.
The Westgate, okay, so SuzanneSummers.com to find out when you'll be at the Westgate.
Westgate, May 23rd for the next year.
May 23rd.
For the next year. And if you go to SuzanneSummers.com, it has the calendar of all the dates where I'll be there. Come see me. I'm bringing back a nightclub like Sinatra used to have, where you put your arm around your girl.
I like that.
Have a couple of drinks.
I'm that kind of guy.
Dark, and me too. And I think our age group, we were, you know, all the big shows, they're great, but don't you just want that return?
I like a good saloon, a nice show.
Yeah. A couple of drinks, smoky.
Big kiss, honey.
Lie on the piano. Great seeing you. Bye-bye.
Suzanne Summers, bye. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
High noon. Been a kind of active couple of hours here. Had some
it
fun.
Has, yeah.
Two points I want to make, two points that are very important, if I do say so myself. The one has to do with Tamika, the young lady who really seems very righteous and sincere, however misguided when it comes to civil disobedience that inconveniences others. But the main point I want to make in terms of police brutality and the vulnerability of unarmed black men to police violence, I want to go back to yesterday, what I said yesterday. I'm really going to try to make it an election issue. A presumption of federal jurisdiction for every single police killing in this land. A presumption of federal jurisdiction for every single police killing in this land. I think that that's the way you give people a sense that there is fairness in the application of police force, justifiable force, and in these encounters, eliminate the subjectivity of the various prosecutors by a presumption of federal jurisdiction for each and every police killing. That's now one of Geraldo's laws. A presumption of federal jurisdiction for every single police killing. The other thing I wanted to point out is written by your namesake in the front page of the New York Times today, Noam Schreiber, his name. He writes about these protesters at McDonald's and elsewhere, the $15 people fight for $15. That yesterday was tax day, 4/15, so it was fight for $15 on 4/15. He writes something that's a very good line. It's kind of buried in this third paragraph, but he writes, the first concrete that this movement is the first concrete scale, is the first concrete large scale challenge in decades to an economic system they view as skewed toward the wealthy. I'll read that again because I screwed it up. This is a potentially pivotal moment. The first concrete, large-scale challenge in decades to an economic system they view as skewed toward the wealthy. I mean, I from his pen to God's ears, I want this to be a movement to liberate people who are being paid disgracefully low hourly wages. I want to bust the chops of every politician who complains about income inequality without supporting a dramatic raise in the minimum wage.